Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Here we are, months into the worldwide coronavirus pandemic and weeks into our nationwide lockdown here in the U.S. in an attempt to flatten the curve of what had been predicted could be as many as 2.2 million deaths by July from the disease. Thankfully, the models used by authorities that made these predictions have proven to be vastly incorrect. And while deaths from the disease continue to mount, both here in the U.S. and worldwide, the modelers have downgraded their predictions by as much as 90%, although I hear lately they're now revising them upward again. The response of imposing the nationwide lockdown by our elected officials at the behest of our medical establishment and authorities has been severe and is having far-reaching economic and social effects. Yet there is hope these days that the worst is behind us, at least for now, and guidelines have been promulgated for a gradual eventual return to normalcy, at least some form of it. And most particularly, the reopening of our formerly booming economy. Here are the latest statistics on the pandemic. Globally, the World Health Organization reports that as of today, May 3, there have been 3,272,202 confirmed cases of COVID-19, as the disease is also known, with 230,104 deaths. In the U.S., the government's Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, reports that as of May 2nd, there have been 1,092,815 total cases of coronavirus and 64,283 deaths. In California, the nation's most populous state with some 40 million residents, the State Department of Public Health reports that as of May 2nd, California now has 52,197 confirmed cases and 2,171 deaths. The relatively few confirmed cases and deaths in California have been the subject of much discussion and debate lately, since logic would dictate that the situation in the state should have been much worse. Since many of the U.S. states have had relatively few cases and deaths in comparison to their populations, there is growing public pressure to reopen these states and the country as a whole and let people get back to living normal lives and making their livings again. And we are finding out a lot of interesting things about COVID-19, among them that it's three times more infectious than the flu in general. The vast majority of those who die from it have serious underlying health conditions or weakened immune systems. 80% of the people who are infected with this disease have no or mild symptoms. Some don't even know they have it. And some 98% who get it recover from it. About 15% of those afflicted suffer serious health effects, and 5% have life-threatening symptoms. Medical authorities now say that coronavirus is seriously weakened by warmer temperatures and is destroyed by sunlight or other ultraviolet light almost instantly. As with colds and the flu, authorities expect that the warmer temps and increased sunlight of spring and summer months, that with these warmer temperatures and increased sunlight of the spring and summer months, coronavirus cases will also significantly decline. Despite claims to the contrary by our left-wing mainstream media, always the propaganda instruments of the Democratic Party, the government response to the pandemic has been thorough and adequate. While some hospitals in the hardest-hit areas of the country have experienced medical shortages and strains on their resources, most of the nation's medical facilities have had no such problems. There is also growing evidence that the CDC and medical and scientific establishments are pressuring doctors to attribute unclear cases of death to coronavirus. Radio and television host Mark Levin has reported that the CDC has been telling doctors if they cannot determine a patient's cause of death, then claim it was coronavirus. White House coronavirus coordinator, Dr. Deborah Birx, publicly stated that doctors are being told that if patients have coronavirus when they die, then these deaths are to be attributed to coronavirus directly. This is leading some observers to contend that the actual number of COVID-19 deaths is being deliberately inflated in order to justify the severe methods used to fight the pandemic, including lockdowns and closings of businesses, parks, beaches, and other recreational facilities, and prohibiting public gatherings. Along with these criticisms are concerns that Communist China, where the pandemic is believed to have originated, is using its political and economic powers to prevent criticism and investigation into its handling of the pandemic, and even blame the USA for the outbreak and a supposed inadequate response to it. It's disturbing to see the growing number of left-wing media outlets, think tanks, and corporations backing China's actions in the pandemic while attacking President Trump and his administration for what has happened here in the U.S. Let's listen to Tucker Carlson on Fox's Tucker Carlson Tonight TV show, April 13th, with some comments about this. Please play soundbite one.
China, the country in which the Communist Party has now imposed tight new restrictions on any research into how exactly the coronavirus began. So in effect, our media are freely choosing to follow the directives of the Chinese Communist Party. Don't ask any questions that might make China look bad, otherwise you're racist. That said, wet markets may not be the actual origin of the coronavirus. In fact, there's quite a bit of evidence quickly accumulating that the wet market is not where it came from. The Wuhan Institute of Virology is another contender for that. Now, new reporting reveals that the lab's research on bats was funded in part from a $3.7 million grant from the U.S. government. Heard anything more perverse than that today? Probably not. Gordon Chang is the author of The Coming Collapse of China, and he joins us tonight. Gordon, thanks so much for coming on. So China has banned or tightly restricted further research into the origins of this global pandemic. Why would they do something like that, do you think?
I think because Beijing is very worried about how this disease started. Because there's growing
the data coming out of China are to some extent, and we don't know the extent, but to some extent are weighted by political considerations. What do you make of our health authorities freely using those data and quoting them when they explain their policies to us? Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't. But it's sort of understandable. We heard Dr. Birx two Tuesdays ago say when they looked at the data from China, new infections, transmissibility, all the rest of it, they thought this was no worse than SARS. And so like in the White House about what had happened, because we had, in fact, not taken precautions because of what China told us.
I would think that the many people in our country in the upper echelons who've collaborated with China over the years would be nervous watching this because people are starting to figure out what exactly is happening to us. Gordon Chang, great to see you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Tucker.
I saw an article yesterday on, I think it was dailycaller.com. That's the Daily Caller News Foundation, that said a majority of U.S. intelligence officials now believe that the coronavirus was accidentally leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China, where it was being studied. I believe that's the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which Tucker just mentioned. And apparently it was being studied with a multi-million-dollar grant from the U.S. It would seem to make sense that the communist Chinese government would not have allowed the virus to cause the harm it did to the country's population and economy if, as some have speculated, this was somehow a biological weapon the communists invented to destroy the West. Even so, China's handling of the outbreak is drawing a lot of criticism and calls for accountability here in the U.S. Among the criticisms are that the People's Republic of China imposed travel bans into and out of Wuhan for its own people, but not for foreign nations, allowing widespread travel by infected Chinese to other nations. There's an interesting article that came out yesterday on ZeroHedge.com. It stated, here are the key findings from the bombshell government dossier on China's bat virus program. Article is by Tyler Durden. It states, a leaked dossier compiled by Western intelligence agencies concludes that China lied and deliberately suppressed or destroyed evidence during the crucial early days of the COVID-19 outbreak, and notes that Chinese researchers have been experimenting with and creating deadly bat coronaviruses. Here are the key findings from the 15-page report compiled by Western governments known as the Five Eyes, according to Australia's Daily Telegraph. The article continues. A key theme of the dossier is that China's negligence and lies resulted in the endangerment of other countries as the CCP silenced or disappeared doctors who spoke out. The paper obtained by the Saturday Telegraph speaks about, quote, the suppression and destruction of evidence, close quote, and points to, quote, virus samples ordered destroyed at genomics labs, wildlife market stalls bleached, the genome sequence not shared publicly, the Shanghai lab closure for rectification, academic articles subjected to prior review by the Ministry of Science and Technology, and data on asymptomatic silent carriers being kept secret. The article continues, the dossier slams China's constant lies about the virus, noting that despite evidence of human-to-human transmission from early December, PRC authorities denied it until January 20, adding, the World Health Organization does the same. Yet officials in Taiwan raised concerns as early as December 31, as did experts in Hong Kong on January 4. China also imposed internal travel bans while condemning the rest of the world for wanting to do so. Quote, millions of people leave Wuhan after the outbreak and before Beijing locks down the city on January 23rd, reads the dossier. Continuing, quote, thousands fly overseas throughout February. Beijing presses the U.S., Italy, India, Australia, Southeast Asian neighbors, and others not to protect themselves via travel restrictions, even as the PRC imposes strict, severe restrictions at home, close quote. The dossier also notes that China successfully pressured the EU to strike language about PRC disinformation and has threatened Australia for continuing to investigate. The Daily Caller has previously criticized the World Health Organization for what it called, quote, running interference, close quote, for communist China regarding the pandemic. Here's some audio from the audio version of their article on this. Play soundbite 2, please.
Lost the credibility WHO faces mounting backlash for running interference for China.
The World Health Organization is facing a mounting backlash over its handling of China's cover-up of the novel coronavirus. WHO leaders, including Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, have run interference for China's propaganda war meant to absolve the communist nation of responsibility for the global spread of COVID-19. The WHO is now under increasing pressure from experts and Republican senators. A re-evaluation of World Health Organization WHO leadership is urgently called for, Republican Texas Senator Ted Cruz wrote on Facebook Friday. By consistently bending to the Chinese Communist Party, from downplaying the severity of the hashtag coronavirus to systematically excluding Taiwan, it has lost the credibility necessary to be effective, he continued. Related World Health Organization spends twice as much on travel as on medical supplies. Republican Arizona Senator Martha McSally said Thursday that Tedros, who won his WHO post in 2017 with China's backing, needs to step down. The WHO needs to stop covering for China. I think Dr. Tedros needs to step down. We need to take some action to address this issue, McSally said on Fox Business. It's just irresponsible, it's unconscionable what they have done here while we have people dying across the globe. The World Health Organization is supposed to fight diseases, not coddle tyrants, Republican Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse told the Washington Free Beacon on Friday. We're in the middle of a public health crisis, but after Americans beat this virus, we need to have a serious reckoning with the World Health Organization. Senator Rick Scott, a Republican from Florida, called on Congress to investigate the WHO and to hold hearings on whether the U.S. should continue funding the organization. The U.S. provides roughly 15% of the organization's funding.
As you may know, President Trump has suspended funding the U.S. provides the WHO pending an investigation into its activities regarding the pandemic, including touting communist China's response to it. I understand the U.S. gave the WHO some $352 million last year, while communist China paid it a paltry $40 million. Here's audio from a video put out by Infowars.com recently on what it calls the real agenda of the WHO. Please play soundbite 3.
Having always been accused by staunch American patriots of being a foreign enemy, the United Nations came into existence in October of 1945. And before they even broke ground for their headquarters, Zhiming Zhe, a delegate from the Republic of China, lobbied for the World Health Organization to be created under the auspices of the United Nations. The first director general of the WHO was G. Brock Chisholm, who wrote how parents teaching morality to their own children was a problem that should be remedied by a world government. In 1959, the WHO signed agreement WHA-12-40 with the International Atomic Energy Agency. The agreement between the two parties stated that whenever either organization proposes to initiate a program or activity on a subject in which the other organization has or may have a substantial interest, the first party shall consult the other with a view to adjusting the matter by mutual agreement. And as a result, we have seen the WHO remain silent throughout the Chernobyl incident as well as Fukushima. After serving as the director of health in Hong Kong during the 1997 H5N1 outbreak and the 2003 SARS outbreak, Margaret Chan was harshly criticized by the Hong Kong Legislative Council for not acting swiftly and for parroting mainland propaganda. She was then hired as director to the World Health Organization. In 2007, the WHO began partnering with vaccine manufacturers, as well as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And in 2009, Margaret Chan declared the H1N1 influenza virus a pandemic and fast-tracked vaccines as the ultimate solution to world health. The WHO came under international scrutiny for making vaccine manufacturers rich while falsely inflating public fear of viral outbreaks. It appeared as if the WHO was taking orders from Big Pharma and the Gates Foundation. In 2007, as the health minister of Ethiopia, Tedros Adhanom was accused of covering up three separate cholera epidemics. A week later, he was made director of the World Health Organization. In January of 2020, during the COVID-19 outbreak, Tedros praised China for their authoritarian reaction.
The Chinese government is to be congratulated for the extraordinary measures it has taken to contain the outbreak. China is actually setting a new standard for outbreak response, and it's not an exaggeration.
In February, he announced that there is no reason to restrict international travel.
There is no reason for measures that unnecessarily interfere with international travel and trade.
In March, he suggested that the entire world should imitate the extreme measures carried out in Wuhan.
Wuhan reported no new cases for the first time since the outbreak started. Wuhan provides hope for the rest of the world that even the most severe situation can be turned around.
The WHO has declared that they will need to forcibly remove family members from their homes.
In some senses, transmission has been taken off the streets and pushed back into family units. Now we need to go and look in families to find those people who may be sick and remove them and isolate them in a safe and dignified manner.
Assistant WHO Director Bruce Aylward recently demonstrated the WHO's unwavering loyalty to China when asked if the WHO would consider allowing Taiwan to be a member.
Would the WHO consider Taiwan's membership? Hello?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear your question.
Okay, yeah, let me repeat the question.
No, that's okay. Let's move to another one then.
If you're not beginning to realize the truth of who the World Health Organization really is, then you are not paying attention.
No one should think the government can wave a wand and all of a sudden, you know, the economy is anything like it was before this happened. That awaits either a miracle therapeutic that has an over 95% cure rate or broad usage of the vaccine.
For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
That was Microsoft founder and billionaire globalist Bill Gates there at the end of the presentation. it seems that those terrible right-wing conspiracy theorists at Infowars.com, chiefly its founder and leader, Alex Jones, are quite concerned with Bill Gates, some would say obsessed, and he and his foundation's activities. And Jones and others on Infowars are always warning its visitors about Gates and the dangers of globalism, which I think he has some points. And, of course, you do see Bill Gates out there involving himself in global matters often these days, including the pandemic. And Gates has recently defended communist China for its actions during the pandemic, calling criticism of them a distraction. Criticism of China. Microsoft clearly has a substantial business interest in the vast emerging markets of communist China, as do many other U.S. corporations. For example, an article last year in the Financial Times, that's FT.com, related that, quote, Microsoft has worked with a Chinese military-run university on artificial intelligence research that could be used for surveillance and censorship, a revelation that has sparked anger among China hawks on Capitol Hill, close quote. An April 29 article on Breitbart.com further discusses this concern. It discusses how communist China turns U.S. billionaires wanting to or doing business with it into its spokespeople. Play soundbite 4, please.
Hayward, How China Turns Globalist Billionaires and Big Tech into Spokespeople. By John Hayward on April 29, 2020. Microsoft billionaire Bill Gates' energetic defense of how the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, handled the Wuhan coronavirus pandemic might have been an eye-opening moment for many Americans. The truth is that Beijing has been working on subverting globalist billionaires and Western big tech culture since the early days of economic engagement with that authoritarian regime. The game of global influence the CCP is playing while its pandemic ravages the world is a game it spent decades preparing for, while the people of the West are still trying to figure out the rules and measure the stakes. Gates raised eyebrows this week by denouncing efforts to hold the CCP responsible for the pandemic it unquestionably unleashed as a distraction in which a lot of incorrect and unfair things have been said about the communist regime. He asserted that China did a lot of things right at the beginning. Chinese state media immediately declared Gates a hero, a sensible opponent of bizarre rumors spread by American critics of the CCP and their crazy followers, and began repeating his comments in its propaganda broadcasts. An outcome Gates surely must have known was coming. Anyone who has the slightest experience with the CCP knows that it assiduously studies Western media, pounces on every political and social stress point it detects, and celebrates Westerners who tell the Communist Party line as heroes. This is the murderous regime that claims Americans have no right to criticize it for herding the Uyghur Muslims into concentration camps because we're still having arguments about racism in our country. It is especially jarring to hear anyone associated with big tech defending the CCP, because its sins were crimes against information, concealing the coronavirus for as long as possible, punishing doctors in Wuhan who tried to speak out, propagating dangerously false information through the World Health Organization, WHO, and posting laughably false numbers about coronavirus infections and deaths. One of the basic laws of the information revolution is GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. The best system produces faulty results when pumped full of bad data. The CCP pushed garbage data into the global health system. Every leader who took the CCP or WHO seriously, including U.S. President Donald Trump and his top officials, is now being savaged for slow and weak responses to the Wuhan pandemic. It is not surprising to see tech moguls and international business tycoons acting as spokespeople for Beijing. The hideous mistake made by the Western world 3 decades ago was embracing the globalist faith that engagement with democracies will liberalize tyrannies over time. The exact opposite is true. The CCP aggressively uses every bit of economic leverage it has been given to influence media and politics in the Western world, making them more friendly to authoritarianism. We are becoming more like them, not the other way around. And the process begins at the top because the CCP holds a great deal of sway over our captains of industry and commanders of mass media. The crudest manifestation of this influence is what students of China's rise have dubbed sharp power. threatening foreign companies with the loss of Chinese investment or access to the surging Chinese marketplace if they do not comply with the CCP's political agenda. Traditionally, hard power is military force and soft power means diplomacy. Sharp power is diplomacy, or else. Wealthy globalists know perfectly well that Beijing can cost them billions with the snap of a communist apparatchik's fingers. They submitted to China's rampant technology theft because it was the price of doing business in China. They will abandon Western notions of free speech without much objection when the CCP orders them to change their websites to remove offensive references to Taiwan or alter retail merchandise that seems to challenge Beijing's territorial claims. The CCP is already enforcing censorship demands on Western speech about the coronavirus pandemic that it doesn't like. No brave stands are made by corporate moguls in free countries when the CCP tells them to sacrifice their freedom or face steep penalties. These companies have simply accepted, and increasingly internalized, the primacy of the CCP's political agenda over Western values.
Here in the USA, there is also growing discontent with what has been seen as authoritarian tactics of medical and governmental authorities in response to the pandemic. As I observed earlier, there has been much discussion about why California, the nation's most populous state, has had such relatively little trouble with the outbreak, and how much need there is to continue the statewide lockdown over it. You may have heard about the two doctors in Southern California who recently put out a video about coronavirus testing they did and questioning the need to continue the lockdown, which garnered some 5 million views on the internet before it was banned by YouTube. There was outcry from the medical establishment, harshly criticizing the methods of these doctors and condemning them over their comments. I wouldn't be surprised if they were threatened with the loss of their medical licenses. Here are some comments about the doctors by Tucker Carlson, April 29. Play soundbite 5, please.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Last night on this show, we played you a clip from a nearly hour-long video produced by two physicians in California, Drs. Dan Erickson and Artin Masihi. Likely many of you had already seen it. That video has had more than 5 million views on YouTube. In their presentation, the two doctors presented a flurry of data pointing to what we are currently learning about this virus and how it spreads. They recited pages of government statistics and then interpreted them in light of their own long clinical experience as doctors. At one point, they noted that the newly adjusted death rate in their state of California, which is much lower than anyone expected it to be, and they asked if government officials there should change their policies based on this new science. Watch.
We've seen 1,227 deaths in the state of California with a possible incidence or prevalence of 4.7 million. That means you have a 0.03 chance of dying from COVID-19 in the state of California. 0.03 chance of dying from COVID in the state of California. Does that necessitate sheltering in place? Does that necessitate shutting down medical systems? Does that necessitate people being out of work?
So whatever your view of the mass quarantines, and maybe you're enthusiastically for them, the questions you just heard are valid questions. In fact, they're critical questions. We should all be asking those questions, including and especially our policymakers. But as Dr. Erickson pointed out later in the video, dissent of any kind is no longer tolerated in this country. Fact-based honesty, which is the soul of science, is under attack, even in hospitals. Dr. Erickson described physicians being pressured to classify illnesses and deaths as related to coronavirus, whether they believe that to be true or not.
We aren't pressured to test for flu, but ER doctors now, my friends that I talk to say, you know, it's interesting, when I'm writing up my death report, I'm being pressured to add COVID. Why is that? Why are we being pressured to add COVID to maybe increase the numbers and make it look a little bit worse than it is? I think so.
So what you just heard, what Dr. Erickson described, is called lying. And lying has no place in science ever. It's scary to think it takes place on a large scale in hospitals. He says it does. Viewers of Erickson's video were shocked and transfixed by this. They forwarded the video to friends who forwarded it on to their friends. And suddenly, millions of people who have spent the last 6 weeks on a diet of Tiger King and internet memes We're watching sober-minded medical researchers reading from charts of statistics. It's hard to recall a science video taking off like this one did. Not everyone was impressed by it. Some criticized the doctor's policy conclusions. And of course, that's fair. Decent people have different opinions. We're not entirely certain what the perfect response to this pandemic is. Nobody is certain. There's no objective answer at the moment. At best, we can plod along with open minds and good faith. More informed debate is exactly what we need to make wise decisions going forward. Unfortunately for all of us, informed debate is exactly what the authorities don't want. They want unquestioned obedience, so they're cracking down on free expression. Last night, the doctor's video, the one you just saw, was pulled off of YouTube, the largest video hosting site in the world. It wasn't an accident. YouTube admitted doing it. The company cited a violation of, quote, community guidelines, and they did not apologize. Looking back, when all of this is finally over, and it will be, it's likely we'll see this moment, what YouTube just did, as a turning point in the way we live in this country, a sharp break with 250 years of law and custom. The two doctors' video was produced by a local television channel in California. It was, in effect, a mainstream news story. The video was not pornographic, didn't violate copyright or incite violence or commit libel. It didn't break any law. The only justification for taking it down was that the two physicians on screen had reached different conclusions from the people currently in charge. It was a form of dissent from orthodoxy.
All this brings to mind where we are going as a nation with the response to the coronavirus outbreak. And I'm not trying to minimize the dangers of coronavirus, and I realize it's a serious and deadly illness, but we are finding a lot of contradictory evidence these days about the virus and our response to it, China, Communist China's response to it, and where we should go with our continued response to the pandemic. There are many people in our government, political media, and other social institutions and corporations who applaud and encourage authoritarian methods in dealing with the coronavirus pandemic and see it as an opportunity to advance their agenda for doing away with individual freedoms and promoting world government. You may have heard Hillary Clinton the other day, who has endorsed Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden, stating that this is the pandemic was a crisis that should not be allowed to go to waste, and wanted to use the situation over it to promote national health care for everybody, I guess, universal health care. This is one example of that. And of course, they also want to get rid of Trump. This is the key thing. And this is the problem, because so many of them are involved in doing business with China and making quite a bit of money. And it's worrisome to me that these people are so short-sighted that they're not concerned about the future of our country, and particularly the middle class, which was suffering terribly as we moved inexorably toward globalism and other forms of socialism, until President Trump came along and started dismantling a lot of this. Let's listen to audio from a presentation by the newamerica.com from its Behind the Deep State series, video series, about the new world order hoped and longed for by these people and their vision of a global technocracy. Will you play soundbite 6, please?
We have finally figured out what kind of system the new world order is going to be. And it's not communism, and it's not capitalism, and it's not a monarchy or a democracy. I'm Alex Newman, and this is Behind the Deep State. The deep state, we all know, has been pushing for this idea of what they call a new world order, like this.
To bring China into the creation of a new world order.
And for the international order that we have worked for generations to build.
Bush said, and it's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge.
For a long time now, we've been discussing and debating, what is this new world order going to look like? And so people on the left wing of the political spectrum sometimes say, oh, it's going to be a capitalist new world order where the capitalists are going to treat us all as slaves and steal the fruits of our labor by exploiting us and busting up our unions. And then you have those on the more right wing side of the spectrum say, oh, it's going to be a communist new world order. Well, not exactly. Turns out the New World Order is going to be what is called a technocracy. And that's a term that really has not been much in use in the popular lexicon, but it's a really important term, and it's been around for a really long time. To kind of understand it in a simple way, basically just imagine getting rid of individual liberty under various pretexts, you know, saving the environment, saving the whales, saving the planet, or, you know, economic efficiency, making sure we don't waste resources on silly things. And so, you know, different pretexts are used, but the common thread that runs through all of it is that we're going to get rid of representative government. We're not going to have, you know, kings or Congress or anything like that. Instead, we are going to be ruled by technocrats, basically scientists and engineers under the control of the elite. So you might think of it as kind of like a scientific dictatorship, or at least a pseudo-scientific dictatorship. Now, the term has been around for a really long time. Actually, it popped up in the 1930s. In 1932, the head of Columbia University, Nicholas Murray Butler, announced that his radical university, which was already filled with, you know, communists and kooks and quacks of all varieties. Of course, that was the home of John Dewey, the guy who helped dumb down the American people through the public school system, not to mention the Frankfurt School, you know, the sickos who came over from Germany and tried to deconstruct morality and civilization. And they decided they were going to support this idea of technocracy. Now, there was a big scandal. It's actually recounted in this book that I'll come back to shortly by Patrick Wood. And the term kind of got a nasty smell to it, but the technocrats did not give up easily. So they then formed this magazine called The Technocrat, surprise. And in 1938, they defined technocracy this way. They said it's the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population. How cute, right? So we have no need anymore for private property. You get rid of money, get rid of prices that are arrived at in a free market through the forces of supply and demand. And basically you have this new system where the accounting unit would be like energy or CO2 now. We hear a lot from the United Nations, resources basically. A resource-based economy is a term you often hear associated with technocracy. So individuals essentially become cogs in the machine. The elites, the engineers, and the scientists decide what should be produced, how it should be produced, and then you just kind of get plugged into the system wherever the scientific dictators think you would best fit. And if you notice, there's a lot of resemblance here with the central planning that was tried in the Soviet Union, that was tried in communist China, and that has been a failure everywhere it has ever been tried. Now they say they have big data, though, so they'll make it work this time. You know, my first encounter with this really bizarre ideology of the elites was actually by a guy who tried to present himself as being an opponent of the elites, as this guy who just had this great idea to restructure the world. His name was Jacques Fresco. He founded something called the Venus Project, promoting the alleged marvels of this resource-based economy. And he had his sidekick, Peter Joseph, a guy who won't tell anybody his last name. And, you know, this guy had come on my radar, too. He had created this thing called the Zeitgeist Movement, working very closely with Jacques Fresco. And some of his comments were really, really bizarre. He said people who have children are self-serving. They don't care about the carrying capacity of the earth. And he said that he wouldn't mind a one-child policy imposed by the government once the population pressure got serious. So, I mean, these guys are totalitarians to the core. One of his big videos that got really famous was just anti-Christian propaganda. Actually very easy to discredit if you know anything about the truth of the Bible and the truth of history. But he got over 100 million views on this video, and the New York Times loved it. They wrote this glowing review about Z Day and Joseph and all this crazy ideas they were peddling. Not one critical word about these guys or their crazy plans. And one of these movies associated with this movement actually won an Artivist Award at a very prominent film festival backed by the United Nations. So we'll come back to the United Nations in a moment, but the connections are very, very, very deep. Now, the machinery for this monstrous idea is being put into place, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And it really is in the United States. The technocratic grip is really got its arms around our throat. But we are not in the lead here. Actually, communist China seems to be the premier example of technocracy. Yeah, I know they're ruled by the Communist Party and they're officially still communist. And in some ways, they do still, you know, maintain the outer trappings of communism. But it's much more than that now. You now have a system where experts and technocrats, engineers, scientists are crucial players in the central planning rather than just, you know, bureaucrats involved in the Communist Party. And you now have a social credit system where the machines keep track of, you know, how reliable of a slave you are. You know, do you have the right opinions? Do you do what the Communist Party says? Do you have any friends who disagree with the Communist Party? Things like this. And all that is factored into a score created by algorithms that determines whether you are allowed to travel, whether you can leave the country, whether you can have a good job, whether you can be the recipient of higher education, things like this. So you have total technocratic control of the economy, massive central planning. And at the global level, this stuff is being implemented as well. On this show, we actually did an episode of Behind the Deep State on Agenda 2030. Now, Agenda 2030, when you drill down, is really a recipe for global technocratic government. The New World Order is going to be a global technocracy if these people get their way. Sustainable development. Very, very clearly, they're talking about shifting the entire economic system of the world, to quote the former head of the UN climate machine. And I want to talk briefly about Patrick Wood. We've interviewed Patrick Wood before. And he's got two books on the subject of technocracy. He's actually the guy who really has popularized this term at the grassroots level, right? The elites are very familiar with this term. But even in the freedom movement and the truth movement, not a lot of people were aware of this until Patrick Wood came on the scene with these two books. His first one was Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. You can see that right here. And then over here, you've got Technocracy, the Hard Road to World Order. I actually did a review of this one for the New American Magazine very recently that you can find if you click below. Before exposing the move toward technocracy, Patrick Wood was actually involved with a guy that we talk about a lot on this show, Anthony Sutton. I consider him to be one of America's finest historians, the late Anthony Sutton. He wrote incredible books exposing the role of the deep state in the rise of Nazi Germany, the role of the deep state in the Bolshevik Revolution, exposing the Skull and Bones Society that we did a whole episode on in this program. And he wrote a book with Patrick Wood. Anthony Sutton and Patrick Wood collaborated. It was called Trilaterals Over Washington. Now, if you haven't read this, it's an extremely important book. We also did an episode of this program on the Trilateral Commission where we mentioned that. You can go watch that episode if you'd like. Very informative. And this Trilateral Commission is extremely important. It's one of the deep state behind the deep state organizations. It was founded by David Rockefeller, who we've talked about many times. I mean, this is a guy who boasted in his autobiography of being a conspirator working with a secret cabal against the best interests of his own country to form a one-world political and economic order. And he founded it with this guy called Zbigniew Brzezinski, the national security advisor to everybody's favorite president, Jimmy Carter. Note the sarcasm there. And in 1973, they founded this Trilateral Commission. And David Rockefeller had read a book by Zbigniew Brzezinski called America's Role in the Technotronic Age, Between Two Ages. And this is basically a full-throated promotion of technocracy. So he argues that pretty much America is obsolete. Marxism is maybe the next step in human evolution. And then after that, we'll move toward technocracy, where the experts will decide things. And so their vision was kind of encapsulated in this term called the New International Economic Order. This was the goal that the Trilateral Commission said it was working toward. And when you drill down to it, as Patrick Wood explains very well, this new international economic order is just technocracy. It's just warmed over technocracy. And now we see this being implemented by trilaterals, by members of the Council on Foreign Relations, which we've also explored extensively in this series, by all these organs of the deep state. So let me give you some examples. Globalist John Podesta, who, of course, is a member of the Trilateral Commission, is very, very deeply involved with the elites and with the push for a new world order. He was also one of the key players behind Agenda 2030, the UN's global program to transform the planet into sustainable development. And they tell you in there, the government should take control of production and consumption. The government should brainwash all children so that they'll promote sustainable development. I mean, that's how brainwashed they need to be. The government should control consumption and production. They should redistribute wealth. It's not enough to just have national wealth redistribution. Now we need redistribution among countries as well, not just within countries. These are all things in Agenda 2030. Now, Podesta, of course, was a very, very important figure in this, and he's been a very important figure in the U.S. government for a long time. Again, a member of the Trilateral Commission. He served as chief of staff for Clinton. He helped run Hillary Clinton's campaign. He was deeply involved in the Obama administration. And he's also, of course, the guy from Spirit Cooking, right? Who could forget the Spirit Cooking? Check out the images of Spirit Cooking. You know, he was invited along with his brother to a Spirit Cooking with Marina Abramovich, and you can see some of the images from that. Absolutely disgusting stuff that these people are involved in. Now, the global warming hoax is also critical to this agenda to pushing technocracy. I mentioned earlier the head of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, her former head, her name was Cristiana Figueres. She actually opened one of these climate summits in 2012 with a prayer to the Mayan goddess Ixchel. True story, actually. This was in Cancun. And, you know, quickly looked up Ixchel. She said it was the goddess of creativity, the Mayan goddess of creativity. Turns out it was actually the Mayan goddess of cannibalism, human sacrifice, and war. What an appropriate false idol to open up a prayer by the UN climate summit. Unbelievable stuff. And she said in 2015, this is a direct quote, this is probably the most difficult task we have ever given ourselves, which is to intentionally transform the economic development model of the world for the first time in human history. Now, one of the quotes that Patrick Wood relies on in this book, The Hard Road to World Order, which again is phenomenal, is really revealing as well. It actually appeared in the Council on Foreign Relations magazine, crucial deep state publication. And the quote was by a guy called Richard Gardner. He said this on The Road to World Order. It will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion, but an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. This was in 1974, by the way. And again, this quote is really important to understanding what's going on here. Now, you know, they are eroding sovereignty piece by piece, and it does look confusing, right? To the average person who, you know, watches the fake media, none of this makes any sense. Why are all these things happening? Why does our sovereignty keep getting more and more eroded? Well, once you understand the agenda, you understand what is going on here. More recently, another member of the Council on Foreign Relations, Dr. Parag Khanna, he wrote a book called Technocracy in America. And this basically proposes a technocratic form of government for the United States. We'll get rid of the U.S. Senate. We'll have a executive committee that'll make all the decisions. And we let the U.S. Supreme Court modernize the U.S. Constitution to make possible, you know, the replacement of representative government with technocratic government. Now, other crucial components of technocracy, at least a road to technocracy, we have these public-private partnerships where you're melding government and corporate power into one, right? So the elitists get to make all the profits off the backs of the taxpayer, and they get to finance all kinds of idiotic projects that the free market would never support, right? Projects to convert us into a technocracy. Another crucial element of this is the erosion of local government, right? No more do we get to have elected city councils and county commissions, things like this. Increasingly, and this is happening all over America, probably in your community too, they are moving toward regional government. So you'll get, you know, a group of cities will come together under this council of government or council of governments, a COG, happening all across America with incentives and funding from the federal government. And it's also happening on a broader scale, too, right? In Europe, you have the European Union smashing national sovereignty. In Africa, you have the African Union. Putin is building the Eurasian Union. In the United States, Mexico, and Canada, they're working on a North American Union. Very, very important components of this. And so the regionalization of government, the removal of representative elected officials, with replacing that with bureaucratic, technocratic forms of government. Another key component of this will be the financial side of it, right? Rather than having plain old money, we'll be moving toward a different type of economy. Probably some type of cryptocurrency will be involved. And naturally, we'll move toward a cashless society. And the elites have been very, very active on this. Maybe we'll do a whole episode on the cashless society in the weeks and months ahead. Smart cities, of course, are another important component of this. They're herding us all into cities, kicking us all off our land. The New York Times just had a recent thing saying that single-family homes are actually racist and segregation. We should all live in stack 'em and pack 'em Agenda 21 houses. Right. And I think Patrick Wood does something really important, too. He points out in the book that this is really beyond just, you know, a physical problem. These people, he's got a whole chapter in here called Worshiping the Creation. And what he explains is that these people have actually made technology, technocracy, scientism into an idol. And they are now worshiping the creation instead of the creator. He's got some great Bible verses in there to support that. And that is where we're moving. Right. Now, you are inadvertently probably involved in this system already, right? You're already being surveilled. You're already being monitored. You're already being controlled. So one of the things Patrick Wood recommends in his book to help fight back against this is get off the social media stuff. Quit using Facebook and Google and Twitter. You know, give them disinformation. Rely on alternatives, right? Don't give them all your information. Don't let them track you and manipulate you. So we've got to resist. We've got to fight back, guys. If the deep state gets its way and we end up with this global technocracy, it is going to be the end of individual liberty, the end of Western civilization, the end of this, you know, everything that we hold dear. So it's crucial that we resist this trend toward technocracy. And one of the ways to start getting involved is to first educate yourself. I'm Alex Newman. This was Behind the Deep State. Thank you very much for watching. Now, if you haven't watched the rest of our episodes, go back and do those. You know, get these books if you need them. Great resource if you want to learn about technocracy. Watch the interviews we've done with Patrick Wood. And get involved in this fight. And like, share, subscribe. YouTube is trying to shut us down. Now, they just took another one of our videos down without giving us any explanation, said it was a violation of terms of service. So help us get this information out, guys. Help us share this with your contacts, with your family, with your friends, with your church, whoever it might be. Help us get the word out. You know, we're not going to be able to defeat the deep state without people taking an active role in getting educated and educating others. So again, do what you can to help us get this word out. Thank you very much. God bless you. Again, I'm Alex Newman. Stay tuned for more.
The folks at the New American are conservative Christians, as you may have inferred, and their views are always derided and considered extremist and crazy by our masters on the political left, who are always propagandizing for their causes, among those the destruction of Christianity, and working hard at dumbing down the masses into accepting their agendas. But I find a lot of truth in what this video presentation had to say. And these are things that anyone who believes in liberty and the pursuit of happiness should be concerned about. Some food for thought, if you're so inclined. That's it for another show. Look for us again 2 weeks from today. Have a good night.